You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome along, ladies and gentlemen. It's back into the history files we go as we reflect on how the failure to hound out Luis Aragonés laid the path for the emergence of arguably the greatest international team of all time.
Luis Aragonés! Luis Aragonés!
But the Spain boss was on the brink after a night in Belfast in September 2006 in which our very own Terry Gibson was among the opposition coaching team. Yes, welcome to How Terry Nearly Wrecked Spanish Football. Spain had started the 2006 World Cup with a perfect three from three in their group, only to fall to eventual finalists France in the first knockout phase. Aragonés stayed in his job despite the criticism he took, but a lacklustre start to the qualifying campaign for the Euros in 2008 had the Wolfpack baying for his blood. It works out happily in the end, yeah. But... So the story of Luis Aragonés. So we're going to go through to the 2008 final, and then we'll look ahead, Terry, another time. Another day we'll look at the World Cup win in 2010 yeah. and 2010 and then 2012, the Euros. They got there. They were a brilliant team. One of the best ever, undeniably. But boy, it was hard work, wasn't it? Because they'd come through the group. He'd taken a lot of criticism after 2006. The first game was a 4-0 win over Liechtenstein. Fair enough. Torres scored. Villa scored two. Luis Garcia scored. And then that game in Belfast. Let's hear actually a little bit of the commentary that night.
He's looking for three goals. He's got them. What a finish. What a night for Northern Ireland. And what a night for David Healy. He can't believe it. The first hat-trick at home in 35 years. George Best got the last one in the European Championships. Those fans cannot believe it. Healy's first international treble. He's had a couple of doubles. He scored two in his debut. He scored two in Trinidad to break the goal-scoring record of Colin Clark. And tonight, against a team ranked seventh in the world, he's got his first international hat-trick. Pick it out.
Jackie, it's a fabulous goal. Fabulous. He's so aware of everything around him. A mistake. You know, they've let it bounce again. He's on it in a flash. And he's a fantastic finisher. You know, he's one of the best finishers I've ever seen. And that's a superb goal. What a hat-trick.
And you might notice there, Gerry Armstrong on commentary... This is slightly by the by. Also part of the coaching team.
What? I think Gerry had left the commentary team. He'd left
right, okay.
the coaching staff.
Right, okay.
By that stage.
If you listen to yes. the commentary, he is referring yeah. to all the players by their first name.
Yeah.
anyway, that's by the by. Good to hear, Gerry. So that game. So tell us, so you've got an inside perspective on this. We are soon to get tiki-taka. We are soon to get the emergence of this team that just looked like it couldn't be beaten, that went into 2008 the Euros in Austria and Switzerland, everyone thinking, wow, this is a good-looking team. Watch out for these guys. But David Healy banged in a hat-trick against them.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about Spain. What Spain team did you face in Belfast that night?
Well, we faced the team... you go through the players and the Iker Casillas in goal. Sergio Ramos was a 20-year-old right-back. Replaced at half-time. Still never found out whether he was injured or replaced by Michel Salgado. The two centre-backs were Puyol, Pablo Ibanez.
Yes, the big
Atletico Madrid guy. Skipper. Yeah. Antonio Lopez was the left-back. Midfield, the star midfield, the star of that game was Al Belda, was the holding midfield player, with Xabi Alonso and Xavi. Where we feared, we were coming off the back, this was a Wednesday night, this game, we'd lost 3-0 at home to Iceland on the Saturday. So we were on getting stick from our supporters and the media from in Belfast. But we were the underdogs going against Spain. And we looked at their team and we were fearful of the front three. Because the front three, Puyol at that time wasn't the player that... He was relatively advanced in his career. But I think Puyol's career really kicked off with this team, the eventual team in 2008 that won the Euros, and Barcelona, Pep Guardiola, because he'd been playing as a right-back at Barcelona for a lot of his career up until that point. So we really didn't see him as an obvious centre-half. But the front three of Raul, Fernando Torres and David Villa was one that we thought, and our players, that we were thrilled to be playing against and were fearful that they were going to cause us some damage. But I think we have to go back a little bit further to the coach before, because Spain had gone a long, long time without winning a trophy. Was it 1964, I think, was the previous
in the Euros,
winning the Euros. But there'd always been a team that we talked up because of their... We didn't get to see through the 80s and the early part of the 90s on a regular basis Barcelona and Real Madrid games every week. But the sheer fact these Spain's team always had, you know, more than their fair share of Barcelona and Real Madrid players. There was always an element of disappointment with Spain teams that didn't progress where they thought they should have been in competitions throughout the years. And I think when you look back, I think the coach before, Iñaki Saez was the coach. He was sacked after the 2004 Euros. They finished third in the group, then got out into the knockout stages behind Portugal and Greece. So then when Aragonés takes over, they actually didn't win their qualifying group. They finished behind Serbia and Montenegro and had to play a qualifier against Slovakia to go through into the competition itself. So they weren't in a great place. The fact they won their three group games in that competition in the World Cup, then got beat eventually by France, who went on to... And it's interesting, you know, looking at this study in this period, and you find different things you recollect with, oh, that tournament, that's the one with Zidane, obviously got the headbutt Materazzi in the final. So that was that period. So when they came to playing us, this wasn't the Spain team that we got to know and love watching play for the next... We were playing a team that was one of the better teams in Europe with some outstanding names that we were getting to see play for Barcelona and Real Madrid by that time. But we were probably worried about our future. But we felt if we played a similar style to, funny enough, what we've talked about in the podcast about the Eibars and Getafe and Alaves and teams like that, then we might have the ability to cause some problems and win some love back from the fans and the media. But it turned into a memorable night for us, all involved with that, particularly for David Healy, of course. But it turned into a massive night for Spanish football.
So David Healy scores a hat-trick. Spain were in front twice, weren't they? Xavi scored a really good goal for number one.
Ripped us apart. That was the one time we looked around each other on the bench and we looked at the players and we thought it was early in the game as well. And that was the quality that came through in that goal. It was a fantastic move. Great technical stuff. And then you thought, oh no, we're in for a long night.
So you can always look for a narrative in these things, and sometimes that's misleading because sometimes, oh, this followed this, that followed this, followed this, and it gives it... This is how we do history, and then you get a nice little story that you can wrap up in a bow. Sometimes when you start unpicking it, it's not automatic, is it? But if you wanted to, you could say that was the moment of tiki-taka. We've got another birth of tiki-taka moment coming up. Again, I'm never convinced that it's the case. So the Spain team, Casillas in goal, Ramos at right back, replaced at half-time by Michel Salgado.
Yeah.
It's a bit slow, actually, Michel Salgado. He's one of the ones who doesn't make it for long. He doesn't make it through the tiki-taka era, the successful era. Pablo Ibáñez, Puyol, Antonio López at left back, Albelda, who went off injured early, replaced by Cesc Fabregas.
Yep, I think Alberto had a fractured cheekbone, I think.
Right.
Surprise, surprise. I think it was an aerial collision in midfield when the ball was bouncing around when they were trying to get down and we weren't.
Xabi Alonso, Xabi, and then Raul Torres and Villa. We'll come back in a second. Your team, Carroll, Duff, Evans, Cragan, Klingon, Gillespie, Davis, Healy, Lafferty, Baird, Hughes, and Mike Taylor came on. For
early.
Roy Carroll, because that's actually how the third goal, literally, you go from back to front. Literally,
yes, it is, yeah.
Hoofs it.
I mean, our goals, we standard stuff, set piece.
Yeah.
Tried to work something different from a set piece against the team that you hope I haven't paid too much attention to what you try and do from a set piece, so that worked. One of the goals was just putting the ball into the penalty areas. We were going to do that as much as we could. Hope Cole Lafferty could cause one or two problems against one of the smaller goalkeepers around. Puyol, one of the smaller defenders about as well. And there was confusion between Xabi Alonso and Iker Casillas, and David Healy scored from that. And the last goal is just straightforward. It's goalkeeper, kicks it down the field. The defending is alarming, lack of defending. One bounce and David Healy's through and lobbed it over Casillas from about 30 yards, I think, with a great finish.
So you didn't manage to ruin Spanish football because they kept Aragonés on in his job. However, the big issue of that time in the Spanish national team is Raúl.
Yep.
So, Raúl, record goal scorer for Real Madrid.
10 years, 44 goals, and that was his 103rd game.
Yeah.
And a legend. Absolute legend.
So, why didn't he play anymore?
I think it's that we have to remember as well, the next game they lost as well to Sweden.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't just on that night, but changes were already made. So that was Raul's last game.
Yeah.
A number of players in that team didn't go on to play in tournaments again for Spain. And they began a process of change of personnel from Aragonés and a complete tear down and start again in terms of style. And I think Raul had the power from being the leader of Real Madrid, the leader of the Spanish national team for a decade. I think it was just an element of Aragonés thinking, if I'm going to go down, if I'm going to get the sack, I want to do it my way. And if I'm being honest, the front three, the names are great. Raul, Fernando Torres, David Villa. It doesn't work as a front three. They're all three of them centre forwards.
Yeah.
At that time in particular, David Villa was playing as a centre-forward for Valencia. He didn't want to play on the wing. Torres was a centre-forward. Raul was a centre-forward. It didn't work. So it probably lent itself to someone like Northern Ireland being able to... There was no obvious style. It was a group of players led by a manager who was going to rely on individual gifted talent to win them games. But I think after that game, and of course there was changes made for the Sweden game where they got beat again, and how he survived, I have no idea. I don't know, especially if you consider he left that role. That was taking on a whole world on its own. Imagine the Spanish press when leaving out the legend, the captain, the leader of the national team and Real Madrid, and then losing another game to Sweden. But thankfully, he did. But I think he was setting things out then under his terms, and he was going to implement this style with the players that he wanted. Went through all sorts of players over the next couple of years till eventually we saw the end result.
And whoever owns the ball owns the game. So we saw really the development of possession football. And the big crucial thing is the element of putting all the little technical guys together.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something that Aragonés had done in his career.
No. And I think that you've nailed it exactly there, because I was looking to see the style that developed, the tiki-taka. He went to a more dynamic front two of Villa and Fernando Torres when he possibly could. But then it was the introduction of... Iniesta had six caps. going into that Northern Ireland game. He was on the bench.
Mm. Yeah.
Didn't come on. So, and he was no youngster. Fabregas was younger. He came on for Albelda after 20-odd minutes in that game, I think 30 minutes. So, Iniesta had 6 caps prior to that game and went 1 start. So we kind of forget he threw in over the next 18 months to get qualification and go into the Euros. Iniesta, David Silva, didn't have any caps. He didn't get capped till a couple of months after Northern Ireland beat him in the next round of international fixtures. So he came into the squad. Santi Cazorla came into the squad. Then you added that with Xavi. An interesting one was Marcus Senna coming into the team as well, that eventually won the European Championships. So it was a complete... It tore the whole thing down and started again with this style of all these diminutive, skillful... They're brilliant. Some of the best midfield players to have ever played the game, and completely changed the style and made it such a thrilling style to watch, which we'd not seen from Spain ever before.
No, it was all...
So it was always in the past,
yeah.
3 or 4 big-name players,
yeah.
Hope that they come up with something special to win the tournament, which they never did. Suddenly we saw this a really easily identifiable style that was unique, or that still is, was unique at that time, to see all these diminutive players keeping the ball. They were so quick, they were winning the ball back quickly, and it all just clicked. It took a while, though. There was lots of players that he used over that period of time prior to going into the tournament. But he never went back to Real. Albelda never went to another tournament. Michel Salgado never stayed in the group again. Antonio Lopez, Ibanez. So there was casualties, but he did it his way after that.
And the players wanted him. It was clear from how they talked about him. There's audio as well there that you can hear that the players wanted Aragonés to stay, which helped him survive. And so from the, as you say, they lost the next game 2-0 to Sweden. And then they beat Denmark 2-1, Morientes and Fia. They won 1-0 against Iceland. Iceland weren't the Iceland that we know now, this very strong team. Iniesta, the scorer, 2-0 away to Latvia, 2-0 to Liechtenstein. Nothing special about these scorelines, is that, you know, Fia got goals in all of these. A 1-1 draw away to Iceland, Iniesta, the goal scorer. And then 2-0 to Latvia. So he's still under massive pressure. There's still the fact that he's not picking Raul is causing mayhem. If you want to read more detail, Graham Hunter's book on Spain, The Making of the Spanish Team, is a really good read. All the details of the hatred that Aragonés had to put up with over Raul mainly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What you've overlooked there as well, they didn't lose any of those games. They were winning. Yeah. They weren't winning by big scores, but they were starting to get some momentum with a new-ish group of players, with the hardcore of players that were serving him well, likes of Xavi and young Ramos, of course, Puyol, one or two players like that. So it was he undertook a really difficult task. But the thing I keep reverting back to is he then thought, well, if I'm going to get a sack, like a lot of managers, I'm going to go out doing it my way and have no regrets. And I think people did start in that qualification as it went on. And they went a long period of games unbeaten for his time, Del Bosque. But he was the instigator of setting that in motion. So I think initially people saw, oh, this is interesting. Yes, the Madrid-based media would have had the ump that Real wasn't being involved, and possibly a lack of other Real Madrid players as well that weren't in the squad. Eventually become heavily Barcelona-influenced. But I think everybody saw that something was going in the right direction, and why change it again before that tournament?
And so, this is a crucial game. They're away to Denmark just over a year after you'd played them and beaten them and put Aragonés on the line, and then the defeat against Sweden. So they're away to Denmark. It's a game they need to win. There's still pressure to bring back Raul. Instead, he goes with Tamudo, who's not a big name player, though, you know, not on the world's stage. He'd scored, and then they score a goal. Let's have a listen to the commentator.
Juega Segues a la apertura a la izquierda para Capdevila. Capdevila con Marchena. Ahora están todos muy parados por delante. Marchena juega atrás, aunque es posible que también España esté mirando el cronómetro. Que estamos en el 39 de la primera parte, que con el gol de Tamudo España está ganando a Dinamarca por 1-0. Va a recibir ahí muy bien Xavi. Xavi con Tamudo, qué gran balón de Tamudo. Sergio Ramos, levanta la pelota Sergio Ramos, gol. Ha marcado España el segundo tanto en Dinamarca.
And the goal scorer is the young fullback Sergio Ramos. And there's a series of passes. So we are clearly at this point, we're seeing what is to be known as tiki-taka. They're playing, they're bold. Tell what's crucial. What's the essence of tiki-taka? Why do I watch some teams try to play possession football and I find it
too
dull?
Slow?
Yeah, and then but you watch that team and you think, wow, this was special.
If you do it too slow, it's predictable. It can be quite dull. You don't go anywhere. But what we saw from Spain, it was so sharp. And that's where, prior to that, we knew Xavi was a good player, but then suddenly he looked a completely different player with the right players around him. It was, as I said, Marco Senna came in. He was the only holding midfield player. But when you see some of the goals, it went from back to front so quick, and then it was dynamic movement up front. The likes of Iniesta, David Silva, Santi Cazorla was another player that was involved in that tournament. Totally different players to what they had before, with Albelda and Xabi Alonso alongside Xavi. Also, and Xavi is now playing with Iniesta, with Fabregas, with David Silva, with Santi Cazorla. It had a whole different look to it. But that's the secret. You've got the technique and the awareness. We obviously got to know that Xavi, he knew what he was going to do with the ball every time he got it before the ball went to him. The understanding he had with Andres Iniesta as well that developed. And everything was done at a speed where when you have fantastic players playing that one-touch, two-touch stuff, moving the ball quickly, it's really, really tough to stop. You can do it for a while, but it knackers you out. You're chasing shadows. You're not getting anywhere near the ball. The ball's being moved before you get close to the player. And that was totally different to the game that we saw when we played for Northern Ireland, where it happened probably five or six times during the game. They scored two goals, cut us open on a couple of goals, missed two or three other chances, but it wasn't constant. It happened fleetingly. But from then on, we saw it happen for 90 minutes a game.
And the trademark of passing the ball to people under pressure and trusting your teammates to receive the ball. They beat Sweden, so they got their revenge on Sweden 3-0. Capdevila, the left back, Iniesta, Ramos, the goal scorers at the Bernabeu. Still no row, he never does come back. And then 1-0 against Northern Ireland. By now, you'd been tempted away by this point.
I think we've been sacked by then as well. No, Laurie went off to Fulham. Yeah. I went with him.
Yeah,
A real shame. But there was talk, the initial agreement was Laurie could somehow do both jobs because there was only a few games left in the competition. We had a chance of qualifying. But that never materialised and Laurie had to make a choice. But by Christmas, he'd been relieved of his duties and I'd gone with him. So it was a shame we couldn't see it through to the final stages of that.
The harsh world of football management. So Spain go on without you. They go to Austria and in their first game, so by now they've got the reputation. By now, we're not talking about this team that's a shambles. By now we're getting excited. Barca hadn't had a great season, funnily enough, going into that.
It's saying this as well. This is before Pep.
This is
before the Pep took over at Barcelona, and then that style was obvious at Barcelona again.
They married
something
together.
Something they've tried in. And then players come into the Barcelona team that helped Del Bosque eventually after Aragonés. But so this was pre-Barcelona's Pep's Barcelona. So it makes it even more admirable that out the blue, Spain had these players. I mean, I saw David Silva play for Celta Vigo when I was living out there on loan. I saw Santi Cazorla play for Recreativo Huelva on loan. And so suddenly see these players, Sergio Ramos as a 16, 17-year-old kid playing for Sevilla. These weren't the players that Spain had been using in the past. Ramos had got into the team at probably 19 years of age and has stayed there, still there now. But Silva wasn't an obvious player to play for Spain at that time. He'd obviously come back from Celta and was playing well at Valencia. So it took a lot of courage for Aragonés to make these changes with the change of style.
So they hammer Russia in the first game, goals to one. I believe I'm right in saying there was no Arshavin. Arshavin is back because they end up playing Russia again. let's not spend a lot of time on it, but Arshavin had a funny old career, didn't
Pavlyuchenko
he?
Pavlyuchenko was up front
yes,
as well.
Yes, he was, and scored. David Villa got a hat-trick.
Yep.
David Villa, I've got to say, in that tournament, he's injured by the end of the tournament.
Yeah.
I've watched it back, all on YouTube. If it's worth having a look.
It is, actually. Just look at a game here. Actually look at the story in...
Yeah.
I'm doing it now. You can watch the highlights, five-minute edits from this game, that game. I must admit, you know, looking at it for this podcast, I've really enjoyed myself because it's not that long ago, but you do forget.
But Villa, so crucial.
Him and Torres.
Yeah.
And the understanding, the partnership, as opposed to the three of them playing up front against Northern Ireland at Windsor Park, where there was no understanding. None of them wanted to be out wide. The two worked well together. And they appear to have a really good relationship as well. When you had Torres, who was 24, he was dynamic. Villa was dynamic. They both knew how to run in behind. They both wanted to run in behind. They both were happy with the ball at their feet. Two outstanding finishers. The understanding, it was a lovely partnership for Aragonés.
The second game, also in Innsbruck, I was at this game. They beat Sweden by 2-1. Yes. Do you want a gross story about this?
Take it away, John. Yeah, please go on then.
For some bizarre reason, I was there as a fan, so there's alcohol involved in these things. And we ended up walking over this hill through a forest in Innsbruck to get to the ground. And we walked down this big hill. There's a road, sort of a service road down this hill. And there are all the Swedish fans' coaches are parked along this. And they'd driven, obviously, probably a number of them from Sweden. And you get to the bottom, there's this little stream. And you think, what's this weird stream? And it was all the Sweden fans getting off and having a pee by the bus. And the whole thing had turned into this stream of Swedish wee. So there we are, not part of this.
I must admit, I thought it was going to be a lot worse than that.
Anyway, so then they play football, which is probably more important than the stream of Swedish wee in Innsbruck. Torres gives Spain the lead. Ibrahimovic, obviously a later part of La Liga legend, gets the equaliser. Gets the better of Ramos, doesn't he? Knocks Ramos off the ball, so Ramos takes a bit of grief for that. And then, crucially, David Villa, again, 92nd minute goal. And then for the third game, weirdly, changes the entire team.
Yeah, rested everyone.
Yeah. Chris questioned this, isn't it? First goal, you've looked this up, so you probably know, but if you haven't, give yourself a few seconds. Who scored the first goal for Spain against Greece in Salzburg and that last game? Top scorer that season in Spain got the second goal. That was Danny Huerta.
Well, yeah.
But the first goal scored by Rubén de la Red.
There are some names in that squad that were nowhere near it when Northern Ireland were beating them 3-2. Sergio Garcia was in that squad. And Danny Guitha is the obvious one, isn't he? You think that Raul not left out, but by this time Spain were good and were doing well, so he was allowed to bring in. I think Morientes had a go at playing up front under Aragonés as well in that, prior to going to the tournament. Javi Navarro got games. Miguel Angel Angulo played. Juanito. So it wasn't an instant process. It took him a while to get the players that he wanted going into that European Championships. But De La Red as well was it was a really good player, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
he was a good player.
His career had to end early because of an illness that he had.
Heart issue, wasn't it?
So he had to
end. He was a really good player, and at that time deserved to be in the Spain squad.
Juanito was in that. He played in that game, actually. So he made the squad, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then, so they're through the group. They've got a 100% record. After that, they don't concede a goal in the rest of the tournament. However, the big game, of course, there is always... As I say, you know, we wrap it up in a bow and we like a nice, neat history. They could easily have lost that quarterfinal. They play Italy in the quarterfinal. They'd never beat Italy in major tournaments. They've got this thing
Italy
about...
Italy were World Cup holders.
Yeah. They've got this thing about losing quarterfinals.
Yeah.
They've lost unluckily in quarterfinals, controversially in quarterfinals before.
Failed miserably in quarterfinals. Yes. They've been fancied to win.
Yeah.
That was another criticism that went their way.
So there was huge pressure on them and nerves going into them, even though Italy hadn't been playing particularly well. But there's a bit of luck. There's always luck. There is not a major tournament won without luck.
Yeah.
And Pirlo and Gattuso are both suspended for the game. and still it finishes 0-0. Spain had the better of a 0-0 draw. It goes to penalties. And, of course, Italy, crucially, scored penalties, won penalty shootouts at the World Cup.
Yeah.
But this time, no. And De Rossi didn't score. De Natale didn't score. The Spain player who missed was Danny Wiith there. And this, I suppose this was Casillas' moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's great footage watching that because the goalkeepers really took my eye. Casillas, because he saves a couple, and Buffon in goal for Italy. The emotion they showed, or lack of emotion, the focus they showed, when you see current goalkeepers and other goalkeepers in the past, it's probably not fair to label current goalkeepers all the same, but they make one penalty save in a shootout and they're going berserk, and everyone's Casillas and Buffon both save penalties in that, and they didn't bat an eyelid. It was done, they've made the save, focused on the next penalty they were going to have to face, and it was so dramatic. And many people, and I think they have a really valid point, believe this game and the way that Spain won it was the turning point, because we talk a lot about mental issues in football in terms of lacking belief, always feeling that things go against you as a host, as a nation, which is Spain, which they've done in the past, never feeling that you're going to have the luck to go all the way through in a tournament. So when they do eventually win this on penalties, with Fabregas, very young Cesc Fabregas, taking the deciding penalty, the relief, you could sense then that Spain were in pole position to win the tournament. And at that time, after that win, were huge favourites.
And, of course, they'd hammered Russia in the first game, and they do so again, 3-0, or Russia... We're a good team, weren't they? Well, Arshavin back for the semi-final, much more of a threat, and Pavlyuchenko playing well up front for them. But they win that game comfortably. Xavi gets a goal. Guita gets a goal. And David Silva gets
Second half goals as well. Mm. So it was tough going at half-time. Russia were in it. They were better than they were in the first. It's quite unusual you play again a team you've already played in the tournament. And Spain had to be at their best to get those three second-half goals.
And then, unfortunately, of course, David Villa, who is the golden boot for this tournament, is injured. So he doesn't play in the final.
Watch the footage, you can see me. I think he does it taking a free kick.
Yes, yeah.
A long-range free kick, pulls up with something and immediately sits on the floor and he's in tears and knows that the final 3 or 4 days away, he wasn't going to make it. And it led to a change that served them well.
And the final. Against Germany, a really good Germany team, but Spain were the stronger. Spain were the favourites by yes. then. Germany were good, but they weren't the team that Spain were. However, it was close, and it all came down to one moment in the 33rd minute.
Torres intenta irse por velocidad.
Gol! Gol! Gol!
Gol!
So Torres' goal, and the player he gets the better of is Philipp Lahm, of course, who is such a superb player.
Yeah.
Torres, pre-injury Torres, if you only saw Torres in the second half of his career after his knee injury,
we're talking
when he slowed
Liverpool, aren't we?
Down. Yeah.
Liverpool Torres.
Yeah, so that was Torres. He actually, you could argue there's a bit of a foul.
It's one of those that could have seen given.
Yeah.
There weren't too many appeals from the German players, though.
Didn't really moan, did
no,
they?
No, didn't really
no,
moan.
Yeah.
But the move that led to that was... That was classic Spain. I think it was four passes. I think he goes from Capdevila, another player I've ever mentioned, that came in and did fantastically well. Marchena he came in and played alongside Puyol. But the move goes from Capdevila on the halfway line, left-back position, shoves it across the pitch, 15 yards to Senna. And you watch Xavi's movement. He's almost level with Senna. And he just runs 15 yards, just sets off. And he puts himself in between the midfield players of Germany who think they've got back behind the ball. And he gets in between the midfield and the defenders of Germany. So it's that classic number 10 in the hole, finds that little pocket of space, all those cliches, and Senna just shoves it into him straight away. And then we see all that talent we've seen over with Xavi over the years. As the ball's coming to his head's on moving about, and he just turns immediately and knows that Torres is going. And he shoves into Torres, and eventually they get a goal. But it was like, you talked earlier about what makes it happen and work so well. It's the pace, and it's having someone like Xavi who knows as the ball's coming to him, he's going to be under pressure, but he can turn, he's got the skill, and he knows exactly what he's trying to do.
And then they dominated the game, didn't they? But they only win 1-0.
Yeah.
They were the best team in the world by this
point. Silva had come in, the team changed, didn't it, because of Villa being injured. So we saw there for the first time all of the diminutive midfield players all playing in the same team with only the one striker. So Torres was the dynamic focal point of the attack. It was Iniesta, Xavi, Fabregas, David Silva with Senna playing behind them. So it that was the first time we'd seen that, really, with just one striker and a whole host of players who, if I'm being honest, 2008 wouldn't have been big enough to have played in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So that was the attraction. It was, Iniesta, he's 5 foot six, seven. Xavi, same. Fabregas wasn't known for his physicality. He was known as a 21-year-old, exciting, attacking midfield player. And David Silva, who's a similar size. We had four really small, creative, skillful, fantastically gifted players. So that the change from Villa, false change, kind of helped Spain in the final against Germany. And they kept possession, dominated possession, and played at a pace that that Germany found it hard to create, get the ball and actually create too many chances for themselves.
So the last word has got to be, I think, about Aragonés, because everybody else is back. The back, we'll talk about them another time, the World Cup in South Africa, and then the next set of Euros.
The influence of Barcelona as well, with the new players that came in from Pep that helped the Del Bosque, and the fact that the manager didn't change it.
Yeah, but Aragonés
developed it.
So where does Aragonés? He's no longer with us, unfortunately, is he, Luis?
Yep, no.
Aragonés, he's a man who, as Graham Hunter mentions in his book, he battled with mental health problems that at the time, you know, you didn't get the sympathy that thankfully, you know, people get now. So he battled through the hard way. He was an old school. He was an old school manager. Abrasive.
Very much so.
Controversial. He made the racist remark that he quite rightly got castigated for. About Thierry Henry. But it's almost an unlikely character to be the catalyst for this very modern Spain.
Very. It is an unlikely character. It was out of character for him to suddenly come up with this new style of football. But I think it goes to show, we remark about how managers have to adapt to styles regarding the players that they have available, and he chose he saw how good Iniesta was, he saw how good David Silva was and Santi Cazorla, and how they could link up with Xavi, and it was brave for a manager to, at that time everyone was looking for 6 foot three central midfield players that could run from box to box in 8 seconds, and he was the opposite, and it took courage under pressure. And God, it was a success. I mean, they were brilliant to watch. I mean, there's always a number of teams about throughout your lifetime that you think back and you go, I loved watching that team. I can go through half a dozen teams, and this Spain team was one of them.
Well, we hope you enjoy. We hope you've enjoyed us looking back on Spain 2008, the build up to that. So from Windsor Park in Belfast, when Terry very nearly ruined it all for everybody, but they survived.
Did him a favour.
Yes, and they came through. Listen to the regular podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Now we'll come back with more specials. We'll get through the history files again, and keep listening, keep telling your friends, keep leaving those reviews. Thank you for listening.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese, oceans and sunsets. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors looking for a custodian who can help them go further. With all the wealth services, technology, and support an RIA firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabious. Find your match and learn why custody is just the beginning at Schwabious.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.